It's episode 260. That's 260 of the Kaiju Popcast. Welcome, one and all. I am your host, Chad O'Brien, and with me today is Jason Gibson.
Hey, yo.
Saying crazy things over there.
Yeah.
And more crazy things. let's hope that doesn't continue forever.
You mean let's hope it does continue?
No, I most certainly don't. For one, it's spiking my volume levels. So need to put a tamper on that. But, guess what, guys? We got games to talk about.
Well, yeah. Some of them, yeah. There are some things happened with gaming services at points in time. Yeah.
Way to clear things up, Jason. Okay, so we're going to go straight into it because we're actually recording on a non-standard day for us. And so we don't have too much time to really do any of the witty banter that we are super well known for, but.
Oh, how generous of you, Chad.
That's
witty.
That's right. So instead we're gonna dive straight into the pool of scum and villainy known as EA's.
Electronic Arts.
Yes, EA's loot box conundrum dilemma problem scenario. That only Jack Bauer can solve. Sorry, I've been watching a lot of 24 lately, or for the first time.
I'm sorry.
yeah. If you want a crash course in, like, the origin of many, many tropes, then there you go. But no time for talking about that. Let's talk about Battlefront 2. Done by EA and DICE. Battlefront 2, if you don't know, is the latest Star Wars shoot 'em up, like, multiplayer battle game, in the vein of Star Wars Battlefront. You might have heard of that. Surprisingly, Star Wars Battlefront 2 is much like that other game. But it includes... That's right. It includes loot boxes, which we've talked about before here on this program. We've also talked about how we dislike the scenario because, I'm relatively sure that the cutback had not happened, by the time we recorded our last episode.
But, no, it had not.
But last time we talked, some Reddit user had done some math and come up with a figure of, I'm sorry, you need 60,000 credits to unlock characters.
Which was, 40 hours in, the Galactic Battle Mode, or whatever.
Right.
That's called.
Right. Yeah. So, let's back off here just real quick. When you play Battlefront 2, depending on your mode, you get a certain amount of crystals, and you use those crystals to unlock things. Actually, I'm not sure if you get the crystals are the real
currency. Yeah, that's the crystals are the ones you buy with real money. You get credits.
Right. Credits. There you go. You get credits, and it costs credits to do pretty much everything. You need the credits to unlock new cards and heroes and weapons and skills and
upgrades.
Yep, and everything. And heroes are the biggest thing here. So when you get a certain amount of credits, you don't even need to. When you open up a loot box in the game, you can get a certain amount of credits, or you can get different cards. You get the opportunity to unlock certain things. But, so you're gonna need your credits to buy stuff. And it costs 60,000 credits to unlock the biggest heroes. Not all the heroes, but your Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker.
Luke, yeah.
And I think that's it, actually. But still. Anyway. To get 60,000 credits, like we said, there was some math done, and it would require 40 hours of solid gameplay, and that's not spending credits on any other thing in the game. Stocking up for quite a while. And that's a big problem. So, everyone was upset, understandably, because for...
Yeah. Had that Reddit post happened last week? I don't think it had. the most downvoted Reddit post in history?
I think it did. I'm not sure.
Did it happen last week?
I'm not
sure. I don't know if we talked about it though.
But yeah, again, we're casting on a non-standard day, so actually I'm not sure of our own personal timeline because we are quite a ways off from our normal Saturday to Saturday line. But anyway, it did lead to the most downvoted Reddit post ever, so yes, there is that. Although reading that post itself, it was standard boilerplate, like, oh yeah, we're listening to the players.
Yeah, it's just PR spin. It just happened to, like, it was like totally at the wrong time. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Tone deaf.
It wasn't necessarily like EA saying like, all you gamers should go to hell or anything like that. It was just, it was just bad, bad PR spin. And it got a poor, obviously poor reaction. So, EA decided, okay, we need to walk this back, and they slashed the prices on unlocking all heroes. I think it's just the heroes, not any upgrades or anything.
I'm not sure, but it was 75%, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, they slashed all the prices by 75%, which means, you know, 60,000 to 15,000 for Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker.
So which, only 10 hours.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's still a very long time, but this is a game they expect you to be playing for at least a year. And so that does take a while, but, yeah, it's a weird scenario. Now the thing is, like, I will come right out and say I don't understand all of the progression systems in the Battlefront 2, like, currency scheme. There was a video I saw online actually kind of explaining all this, but it was like a 10-minute video, and, just no thanks.
yeah.
But from what I understand, you play games to unlock these loot boxes. The loot boxes contain cards, and the cards can be used to gain credits or get your upgrades and stuff like that. But then you can also pay money to, as we said before, get crystals, and the crystals can also be used to unlock loot boxes. And then the loot boxes all have a chance of containing, various rarities of cards, commons and rares and stuff like that. The problem with buying loot boxes in Battlefront 2 is that, unlike most other games, say your Overwatch or your Dotas or whatever, you have cards that significantly improve your ability to play the game. Now, I mean, you can say that's true of a game like Hearthstone, but that's really more of a strategic sort of thing.
Well, I mean, like the cards actually give you the ability to play the game. It doesn't necessarily, like, improve your ability. It's like, you cannot play the game without the cards. That's like the whole, it's a collectible card game.
It's true, but you understand what I'm saying. Like,
yes.
Yeah. If you get
pay to win.
Yeah, if you get a whole bunch of common cards in Hearthstone, you're going to be screwed by people who have, like, super rare cards. But anyway, that's kind of happening in Battlefront, in that, there are certain skills that you can unlock with these cards, and these are skills that apply to the actual multiplayer game. These are things like accelerated health regeneration, or when you're in a TIE fighter or X-wing, you can turn faster, and that is obviously a very good tactical advantage in a starfighter. So these are things that do not affect the single player, as far as I know, but even if they did, the single player campaign is super short. They do affect the multiplayer, and that's not quite right.
Yeah, it's not real kosher.
Yeah.
Not real kosher.
Unless there's a mode where none of those mods have any effect whatsoever, which in that case, it's like, then why even bother with them? Or, like, it kind of feels like your character is incomplete because they require these cards to actually be able to do certain things.
And I know we've talked about it before, but, I mean, It's like if this game had been like a free-to-play game, like Hearthstone is, then it wouldn't be so bad, because then you would know, like, this is the price of entry, is the microtransactions. Yeah. But it's not. It's a real game that costs you $60, and you shouldn't have to do this bullshit.
And another problem that that buying loot boxes to get cards that affect your abilities in multiplayer games can cause is the fact that it might have an adverse effect on, like, you being able to play the way you want to play. Because in Battlefront, there are classes of characters that you can choose from, whether they be, like, assault or more support-oriented or whatever. But if you are, let's say, you're the support type, but you keep unlocking cards that are built more for assault, like close-range weapons and, I don't know, advanced, I don't know, our armor, things like that. Then, yeah, you're gonna be forced to use those cards because they're all you have. And that's not how you want to play. So that's not very good. And then, of course, there's the fact that, like, you also have a kind of level that is based on how many cards you have, period. And this level is actually kind of important, because you can, when you start playing the game, you can only equip one card. But you can equip two cards once you are at card level 5, for example. So
you can only equip more cards when you get more cards?
That's right, yes.
Which you get by buying them.
Right, so that's the thing, is like, people can just buy packs and packs and packs, and that will increase their card level, which allows them to attach more mods to their characters, which obviously gives them a leg up over other people who didn't do that. There were certain things that were locked behind progression, like you can craft cards using crafting parts that you also get out of these loot boxes, or by getting duplicate cards, but the things that require that, you know, you have to get skilled progression, but at the same time, if you spend all that money to get your card level up, then you're going to get that leg up, which means you'll probably have a better chance of getting a higher score, which will in turn make your progression go faster. So, yeah, it's pretty much a pay-to-win scenario, which eventually led EA to finally say that they are shutting down the microtransactions temporarily. Let me say, it probably wasn't fan outrage, or at least it wasn't all fan outrage. Fan outrage probably led to a chain of events that eventually led to this shutdown, by bringing Battlefront to the non-gaming world, to the mainstream world. So this whole fiasco over loot boxes and the cost and the time sink that's required to get all the goods you want, that has actually led Battlefront 2 to come on CNN as a story. And CNN picked up this report of all these, you know, people upset with the new game, and the game is being released within a month of the new movie coming out, and who owns the movie? Disney. And Disney has just put in a deal with Rian Johnson, I don't know how you pronounce his name, to make a brand new trilogy. They are really backing this guy. And the problem is, like, that means that they are also much less tolerant of any kind of screw-ups. They're going to be shutting those down quickly. So when this stuff came out on CNN and it's getting on all these mainstream news sites, some people are suspecting that there was a call from the Disney corporate office to, I don't know his name. I actually had his name for a bit, but basically, the guy in charge at EA.
You mean Lucifer?
No.
Sorry, I'm not a fan of EA.
Yeah, so Andrew Wilson, that's his name. I knew it was Andrew something, but I was going to say Andrew House, and that's not right.
No.
Yeah, anyway, Andrew Wilson, head of EA. So some people are speculating that Disney called Wilson and was like, dude, get your shit together. So, right, for now, microtransactions are turned off, and that's a it's a Pyrrhic victory for people who hate pay-to-play, because...
Yeah, but I mean, like they said, it's temporary. It's gonna come back once they figure out a better pricing model, I suppose.
Well, they said they're actually gonna tweak the progression system itself, not the pricing model. That's not what they were talking about. But the problem is, in the meantime, they have the terrible progression system still up. And I mean, you know, you have no choice but to go with that, but it now means, like, the pay to play, or pay to win, really, was a way to get around, like, this really horrible, shitty progression model. But now you don't even have a way to get around that model, and that's not very good.
No, but I mean, at least the playing field's gonna be somewhat even. I suppose. That's good, I guess.
I mean, sort of, but, like, it's kind of weird, because the microtransactions were shut down on Battlefront 2's official launch day, which needs some clarification, because the game was available for people who had EA access or had pre-ordered the game. You got like 2-3 days of early gameplay, which means that all those people were already like the hardcore fans, because they were willing to shell out $20 extra just for 3 extra days of play, and that, you know, that they were probably willing to plunk down a lot of money as well, which means they probably got a lot of loot boxes, and so they're ahead. But I mean, if matchmaking is doing its job, then they'll probably be like at the, you know, at the top levels, and you can stay down at the lower levels, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess if you're talking about it that way, like, the matchmaking system should take care of the whales and separate them out from the free players.
Should,
right?
Being the key word there, but yeah. Yeah, it's, I have no doubt that there were already people who would plunk down at least $1,000 on loot box.
Probably did that day one.
Yeah, because that's what whales do. That's how whales swim. Right. So, anyway, they said they'll be upgrading the progression system and then talking about microtransactions later, so we don't know what's gonna happen, and, I hope they fix it. I hope they do something nice with it, because, that game looks so good, and I want to play it. I want to play it badly, Jason. I really want to play it.
Then buy it, and then, don't ever play it, like all the other games you buy, Chad.
Okay, we need to get off that topic right now. yeah. Anyway, let's move on to, slightly better, well, better, like, it's not as depressing or upsetting topic, I guess, and that is the Video Game Awards. Or at least,
yay.
It's better for me. Like, if Chris was here, I'm sure he would put out a depressed sigh and say, like, do we have to talk about this? Because,
well, I'm kind of in the middle there. I mean, like, I think the awards themselves are good, but, like, the show is just bad.
Well, we're just talking about the awards, so there you go. We're just gonna go through really quickly, because this week we had the nominees came out for all the different categories, and we're gonna go through and see if we agree and see if we can pick a winner out of these categories. Because we're smart people, right? We know what games is and likes.
Sure. We know the things that them gamers like.
That's right. So, without further ado, why don't we check out the Game Awards? I am on the website right now looking, at the page, and, we're just gonna start by going all the way to the bottom, because we're gonna work our way up. And Jason should have it on his screen at some point.
It was already on the page, man. I'm ready. I'm prepared.
Oh, okay. We're scrolling down to the bottom where we get to pick the best Chinese game. A fan voted award to recognize the most popular game in China as judged by the Game Awards viewers in China. Because if you didn't know, one of the major supporters of the Game Awards is Tencent, which is a Chinese company. So, we're gonna skip that one because I
liked Icy. I thought Icy was a really good game.
Yeah, Icy's fine. Monument Valley 2, I'm sure, is great. But, I don't know any of the others. Never even heard of them. Alright, so we're moving on to the next one here. So we have the,
presented
that's right, the best debut indie game presented by Schick Hydro.
Are they gonna have the Hydro bot again?
Are they? That's why I had to descend into a oh god kind of mode. But yeah, so best debut indie game. This is the best indie game that is the first presentation by a certain indie company. So I think we can vote on this. We have Slime Rancher by Monomi Park, Mr. Shifty by Team Shifty, Hollow Knight by Team Cherry, Golf Story by Sidebar Games, and Cuphead by Studio MDHR. Out of all these, I haven't played any of them but Golf Story, but I have seen several videos of all the others except Slime Rancher. And I'm just gonna give this to Hollow Knight.
Yeah, that's what I'd go with. I have actually played Hollow Knight and Mr. Shifty and Cuphead. Never played Slime Rancher. Yes, Hollow Knight. All the way. It's a great game.
It's a great game. It looks great. Plays great. It sounds great. It's great.
You should play it if you haven't.
That's right. So, best esports team, we're going to skip that. Presented by Omen.
Can we skip the best esports game?
Yes, we can. And don't care. Trending gamer, because I don't know any of these people. Best student game, we can't vote because I don't know any of these games or these people. So, keep on going. Best independent game. And we have several here. One is Pyre by Supergiant Games, Night in the Woods by Infinite Fall, Cuphead by Studio MDHR, and What Remains of Edith Finch by Giant Sparrow. I'm sorry, I said and too early. And Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice by Ninja Theory.
How does that qualify as an indie game?
Yeah, I was about to say, Ninja Theory is not...
an indie developer.
Yeah, they are smaller than AAA studios, I would guess, but they...
Yes.
And
Supergiant, I mean, I guess, like, they're kind of, like, this is their third game, and they're all critically acclaimed, so I guess they're technically an independent game studio, but they're... I don't know.
Yeah, critically acclaimed has nothing to do with it, Jason. You can,
I suppose so.
You can make as many critically acclaimed games as you want and still be an independent studio. By the letter of the law, an independent studio is just not owned by a publisher, I guess. But
I guess Ninja Theory is independent.
Yeah, so, but even given that, I would give this award to Pyre because that was such an amazing game.
I give it to Pyre just on story alone. If we weren't talking about story, just gameplay, I'd give it to Cuphead. But the story in Pyre was just so good. It's just so good.
It was. It made me laugh. It made me cry. Made me do both at the same time. So, moving on, we have the most anticipated game presented by McAfee, or no, the McCafe.
It's McDonald's.
I was like, I haven't heard McAfee for a while, but then I noticed that accent.
I know what you're voting for.
No, you don't.
Of these five, I know what you're voting for.
No, you don't. We have The Last of Us Part 2, done by Naughty Dog and Sony Interactive Entertainment, Red Dead Redemption 2 by Rockstar Games, Monster Hunter World by Capcom, Marvel's Spider-Man by Insomniac, and God of War by Santa Monica Studio. So, go on. What do you think?
You're voting for Monster Hunter.
No, I'm going for
really?
Red Dead. Red Dead.
Really?
Because that was an absolute, because Rockstar always makes great games. Even though I am not a fan of any of the GTA titles, I do like their game design. Red Dead Redemption was great. It was amazing. If they put out a Red Dead Redemption HD, I would play that right now. If they put out a Monster Hunter World 3 HD, I would not even buy it. Because, you know, I don't care about the old ones. I care about the new ones. And yeah, sure, and Monster Hunter World is a new one, but it's Monster Hunter. Like, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be great. Like, I am anticipating it. But, like, not to the levels that I'm really looking forward to see what they do with Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to pick one, I'm probably not going to play any of these, but if I had to pick one, it would probably be Last of Us, just because, like, I played the first one, and it was awesome, and if it's, like, anything close to the first one, it's going to be really good.
All right. Yeah. It's hard for me to say Last of Us Part 2 now, because that trailer left a really bad taste in my mouth. The trailer at Paris Games Week, which included, like, brutal bashing of somebody's elbow with a hammer, like, yeah, and we don't even know who it was or who was beating them, and it's like, why is this here? Best multiplayer, best sports and racing game, skip.
No.
Best strategy game, we
XCOM.
You can say XCOM, I'll say Mario and Rabbids, but I haven't played any of the others, so I can't really say.
I kind of want to try Tooth and Tail, it looks interesting.
It does look interesting, but yeah, I haven't picked it up yet. Best Family Game, I've played a couple of these, so let's see. Best Family Game, we have Splatoon 2 by Nintendo, Sonic Mania by Pagoda West Games and Headcanon, Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle by Ubisoft Paris and Milan, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe by Nintendo, and Super Mario Odyssey by Nintendo.
I'm gonna go with Mario Kart on this. It's just Mario Kart. You can't go wrong. Mario Kart.
I'm inclined to agree. Like, Super Mario Odyssey, it's nice, and it does have a little kid-friendly co-op mode where, like, the second player can control Cappy and spin around, and that's kind of fun, but at the same time, like, it's not as fun as just letting your child control a go-kart, and you turn on, like, the assist mode so that they can, like, never fall off or anything, so... yeah, it's a lot of fun. Mario plus Rabbids, it's for kids, I can understand why they would be into the Rabbids, maybe, like, if they're the same kind of child who would like Minions, but, like, wrapping your head around all the strategic combat is, they're not gonna do that.
Yeah.
And same with Sonic, like, there's no strategy in Sonic, but, like, Sonic is just, like, looking at a lot of pretty colors while you run really fast, and, like...
It's not really something you sit down as a family and play, you
right.
know?
And, yeah, it's cute, again, but it's, I don't know. I feel like even kids would want some kind of sense of accomplishment, and... I don't know. It's kind of hard to judge your own accomplishment in Sonic. Like, you just eventually get to the end. So let's go on to best fighting game. We have Tekken 7, Nidhogg 2, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, Injustice 2, and ARMS. And this obviously goes to Injustice 2.
I have no opinion except for the fact that I liked Marvel vs. Capcom 2. So I like Marvel vs. Capcom, but I hear it's actually Infinite's a bad game, so...
So do I. Actually, I'm going to rescind my vote and give it to Tekken 7. Actually, I'm going to rescind that and give it to both. Because... and not for the actual games themselves, but for the guest characters that we keep seeing coming out of these guys.
Oh, so, God.
For example, Injustice 2 recently announced that you can play as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It was amazing. And that's also including,
these are the 80s cartoon turtles, right? like the wacky ones.
They are the wacky ones, but they're Injustice 2 CGI style. So,
right, but they're not like newer releasing like cool thin like lithe looking Ninja Turtles. They're like the old wacky stupid 80s guys who like pizza, right?
I mean, I guess we only got to see like 10 seconds of them at the trailer, so yeah. And then Tekken 7 just announced that you'll be able to play as Noctis from Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah,
so there you go. All right, moving on. Best role-playing game, we have South Park The Fractured But Whole, Final Fantasy 15, speaking of which, Divinity Original Sin 2, Nier Automata, and Persona 5. And this is a hard one for me because it's hard for me to actually say Nier Automata because that one really doesn't feel like an RPG. That feels like action-adventure because you go around and hack and slash robots and you do have levels and swords and stuff, but it's not really the same. Persona 5, I really loved, and so I'm gonna give it to that, and that was my game of the year last year. Divinity, I have heard a lot of great things, but I haven't played it.
I should have played that, but I didn't. Yeah. The rest of them, I don't know.
Final Fantasy 15, also great, but, like, not on the level of these others, so, doesn't get that. Alright, best action-adventure game. Nier is not on here, and that's a sin, by the way, guys, so I'm just letting you know. Uncharted The Lost Legacy by Naughty Dog. Assassin's Creed Origins by Ubisoft Montreal. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild by Nintendo. Super Mario Odyssey by Nintendo. And Horizon Zero Dawn by Guerrilla Games.
I've played none of these, but I'm gonna give it to Zelda, because it's Zelda.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Nier absolutely belongs here, and if it was here, I would give it to Nier, but it's not, so I'm gonna give it to Zelda. Cause, as much as I like Odyssey, there were plenty of problems, like the focus on motion controls and the incongruous art style that it had, and, just Legend of Zelda was a delight from start to finish, so, yeah. Moving on to best action game, we have Prey by Arkane, published by Bethesda, Neo by Team Ninja, not Ninja Theory, I always make that mistake somehow, by Team Ninja, Destiny 2 by Bungie Activision, Cuphead by Studio MDHR, and Wolfenstein 2 by Machine Games. And this one is actually hard for me because I absolutely love Neo. That might be one of my top three video games of the year. But, honestly, I would give that more of an RPG quality than,
it's a true Souls-like, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Souls is always counted as RPG because it is.
Yeah.
If I don't give it to Neo, then I'm going to give it to Wolfenstein 2, because that had just an amazing story, and the action was great. But since they put Neo in here, I'm going to give it to Neo, so.
I mean, like, I've only played one of these games, so I guess I have to vote for Cuphead, because that's the only one I've played. But it's really good. It's really hard if you like platformers, which I don't think you do. If you like platformers, you should definitely play it. It's a good game.
I don't dislike platformers. I'm just meh on them.
It's a category for you, Chad.
Sort of. Yeah. The best VR or AR game, including no AR here, but, Superhot VR by the Superhot team, Star Trek Bridge Crew by Red Storm Entertainment, Lone Echo / Echo Arena by Ready at Dawn, Farpoint by that's gotta be a typo, right?
Impuse
Gear?
It's gotta be Impulse.
It's gotta be, right?
Impulse.
And Resident Evil 7, Biohazard by Capcom. Or, if you're in Japan, Biohazard Resident Evil 7. Out of all of these, I'm gonna give it to Resident Evil 7, because, Oh, what a strong title to start the PlayStation VR on. It was amazing. It's a complete, like, a turnaround of the series for Capcom after, like, just the debacle from Resident Evil 4 down to 6, where it just descended into pure action. Going back to the horror, and the story was, of course, just a stupid story from beginning to end, but it was a delight to play, and in VR, it was scary as hell. So, we move on to Best Handheld Game. Poochie and Yoshi's Woolly World by Goodfeel and Nintendo. Monster Hunter Stories by Marvelous. I actually didn't know it was Marvelous. Interesting. Anyway. Metroid Samus Returns by Mercury Steam. Ever Oasis by Grezzo. And Fire Emblem Echoes Shadow of Valentia by Intelligence Systems. And out of all these, it's actually a difficult choice. Monster Hunter Stories was a lot of fun. I mean, it was a very simplistic style and stuff like that, but so is Pokemon, and that's fine. I'm gonna give this to Fire Emblem Echoes because I love my Fire Emblem. I can't get enough. Yep, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I don't own a DS. Yeah. I mean, they might as well just name this best DS game.
That's because right. Every single thing was published by Nintendo. Yeah. So you were gonna say?
No, I was just gonna say, I don't own a DS, so I have no opinion.
That's okay. All. I see. Alright, well, speaking of Fire Emblem, best mobile game is Fire Emblem Echoes. I did it now. Okay. Jeez. Okay. Yeah. On the official site, they mixed up Fire Emblem Heroes with Echoes and Echoes with Heroes, and it was crazy for a bit. But anyway, Fire Emblem Heroes. Again, we're best mobile game here. Fire Emblem Heroes by Intelligent Systems. Super Mario Run by Nintendo. Old Man's Journey by Broken Rules, Monument Valley 2 by Us 2 Games, and Hidden Folks by Adrian DeZong and Sylvain Degrig?
Swedish, I guess.
Yeah, so sorry guys if I mispronounced your name, which I definitely did. I've only played one of these games, so Fire Emblem Heroes for me, I guess.
I played Fire Emblem Heroes. I played Mario Run. Actually, I have it for my son. It's pretty good. I enjoy it. Actually, I think like in small snippets, I enjoy Super Mario Run more than Fire Emblem Heroes. But I think like for deep gameplay, Fire Emblem Heroes is better, so I'm going to give it to that.
All right, well, then let's move on to the next one, and that's Best Ongoing Game, which actually we're going to skip, but
it's an interesting... You'd go for Overwatch.
I would go for Overwatch. It's the only one I've played out of all these, so... I have played Destiny 2, but I'm kind of fallen out of that. I've fallen out of Overwatch 2, but that took a good, like, at least half a year. Destiny 2, like, it's been, like, less than a month. So we're moving on to Games for Impact, which is for a thought-provoking game with a profound pro-social meaning or message. And here we have Please Knock on My Door by Lival Games, Night in the Woods by Infinite Fall, Life is Strange Before the Storm, that's the prequel to Life is Strange, by Deck Nine, Bury Me My Love by The Pixel Hunt, What Remains of Edith Finch by Giant Sparrow, and Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice by Ninja Theory. This is another difficult one because, I loved the story of, since we're talking about Games for Change, I loved the way they tackled Senua's kind of mental issues and her anguish and her schizophrenia in Hellblade. And like the audio was spectacular, the way it constantly had whispers coming at you and kind of made you feel like you were in her head and could hear the same things she was always hearing. Night in the Woods was an amazing story because it presents a story that was very relatable to me as a guy who is from a Midwest town. Now I'm from bit more urban area than this place was, but, like, I know what it's like to see, like, a main street completely shut down with, like, all the stores, dying out and what it means to, like, leave that and what it also means to see people come back, like, dejected when they couldn't make it out on their own and are kind of, like, forced to come back. And that's what the story was all about. It was about coming home and also trying to escape. But, yeah, so, I'm gonna give it to Night in the Woods because I just like, I liked how the story flowed a lot better there, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't play any of these, but from what I know of the stories, I would probably pick Hellblade just because it appeals to me more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, speaking of that, we have, next one is Best Performance. And the first one up is Melina Jurgens, from Hellblade, who played Cinema. And, next is Laura Bailey from Uncharted The Lost Legacy in her role as Nadine Ross. Claudia Black from Uncharted The Lost Legacy in her role as Chloe Fraser. Brian Bloom from Wolfenstein 2 for his role as BJ Blazkowicz. And Ashley Birch from Horizon Zero Dawn in her role as Aloy. And out of all these, I think it's, like, hands down, it goes to Melina Jurgens. Because, yeah, that was a fully, like, completely facially motion-capped, acting and, like...
Yeah, I mean, like, the picture here on the website is her in her mocap suit.
Right, yeah. With the dots on the face and everything. So,
go ahead.
Of course, this also has to do with, like, you know, the way your voice is presented and everything. And I don't know, she was able to convey, like, the problems she was going through, so.
Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't actually, like I said, I haven't played any of these games. So, I mean, like, just on reputation alone, I would pick Laura Bailey, just because she has such an incredible body of work. But then again, you know, like you said, Hellblade's pretty impressive. And I did watch some of the Wolfenstein 2 movies, and, you know, like, BJ's voice is pretty good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I gotta pick Laura Bailey, but that's just more on reputation than anything.
I will say, though, like, just on the note of, like, diversity and stuff like that here, is it is interesting to see because we're so used to this being dominated by people like Nolan North. Or Troy Baker, every year, but this time it's four women and only one man. So,
yep.
Just an interesting little flip. All right. So best audio design. So this goes to audio and sound design. It's different from music though. So just the sounds themselves. Destiny 2. By Bungie, Hellblade by Ninja Theory, Resident Evil 7 by Capcom, and Legend of Zelda and Super Mario Odyssey by Nintendo. And this one's kind of hard because Hellblade, I mentioned before, I loved how they did, like, the whispering, in your headphones, even if you don't have, like, Dolby surround headphones or anything, it was still able to use, I don't know what the technology was called, but they used some kind of special technology to basically make it so that you could hear voices from all different angles and sides, and it was pretty crazy. But also, The Legend of Zelda had, so many sound effects that, like, I just didn't think of, like, you know, just walking on different terrain, hitting different objects with different items, like, there were so many times, like, I was just kind of surprised to hear a certain sound, and it was a nice surprise. Like, when the rain falls and you're wearing metal, like, it has a different sound than if you're just wearing cloth garments. So, I don't know, just a whole bunch of things like that, but probably Hellblade deserves it here.
Yeah, I haven't played any of these either, so sure.
All right, well, you've played one of these.
I have.
just one. But best score in music goes to Destiny 2 by Bungie, Cuphead by Studio MDHR, Nier by Platinum Games. I should stop saying the developers for games I've already said. So, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, and Persona 5. And that one, so hard for me. I'm going to give it to a combination of Nier and Persona 5. But probably Nier, mostly. Persona 5 had so many tracks with amazing lyrics and beats and rhythms. That was great. But Nier had just the most amazing, like, dynamic soundtrack. So based on what you were doing, different instruments would come in, or it would crescendo, or it would, anti-crescendo. I actually don't know what the word
is. De-crescendo.
Okay, there you go. It would de-crescendo. I used to play in an orchestra, but I forgot that. Yeah, so it would do things like that, or there were hacking mini games, and whenever you went into a hacking game, like, it switched to a chiptune style of whatever the music was. And yeah, it was great. So, like, you would sheathe your weapon and the battle theme would, like, slowly decrescendo. Oh, thank you, Jason. Decrescendo into a soothing, like, you know, atmospheric track. And then as soon as robots appeared again, whoop, here it comes. And you're back into it. So it was great.
I really enjoyed the Cuphead just for authenticity's sake. You know, it's really harking, like, the whole thing is a 30s throwback, right? And everything is just so spot on. It's really just amazing how accurate everything is, right down to the music. And I just really, really enjoyed that. And I'm kind of a jazz aficionado myself. And to go back to the roots of that was just kind of really, really enjoyable for me. So I think, like, even though I haven't played the other ones, I probably still would give it to Cuphead, just because that's something that I'm partial to myself.
Obviously, the most authentic would be if every copy of the game came with a piano player that you could bring to your house who would play the music while you played the game.
Yep.
I'm just saying, they didn't do that, so, you know. Best art direction goes to Destiny 2, Cuphead, The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, Persona 5, or Horizon Zero Dawn. For me, it would probably be Persona 5 or Cuphead, but honestly, I'm just going to give it to Cuphead, because, good God, the art in that game.
It's ridiculous. It's all hand-drawn. Every last bit of it, it's crazy.
Yeah. I haven't played it myself, but I have seen videos, and yeah, you know, I mean, it's
insane.
Yeah. It's insane. Exactly. Next up, best narrative. We are nearing the end here, guys. Best narrative. We have What Remains of Edith Finch, Nier Automata, Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, Wolfenstein 2, or Horizon Zero Dawn. Wolfenstein 2 was an amazing, it was just a blast from start to finish. Horizon Zero Dawn, I actually haven't played enough, but, like, it's certainly intriguing. Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, like I said, I just love their take on her issues. What Remains of Edith Finch, I haven't played. Nier Automata, though, gets it for me, hands down, because just the way it takes on, like, it's hard to really discuss without spoiling anything, but just, the story that you play isn't the story that's going on, so, if you haven't finished the game, finish it and keep playing. That's, like, really all I can say. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, yep. I haven't played any games, so, yep, can't comment.
Like, I mean, it's pretty common knowledge by this point that there are, like, 5 actual endings to the game. Lots of joke endings. Like, 20 joke endings. But there are 5 actual endings to the game, and they're not alternate endings. They are just endings. Right, so best game direction, which goes to innovation and vision. So Wolfenstein 2, Resident Evil 7, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, and Horizon Zero Dawn. This one's kind of hard for me, because as much as I love Zelda, I loved Also, the innovative twist that they took in Resident Evil 7, like the fact that they were willing to jump into VR and kind of make an experience based around that. But at the same time, I'm still like 80% in the Zelda camp, because that was just we've talked about this before. Games are going to imitate the Zelda model from this point on, for at least like the next 5 years or 10 years.
From everything I've heard, that's what I understand. So yep, I'd probably pick that one too.
Yeah. And that leads us to our last thing, and that's the game of the year. Game of the year, which goes to one of these five: The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds by PUBG Corp, and Persona 5, and Horizon Zero Dawn.
I'm not real sure what PUBG is doing on this
list. It's
honestly,
it is. It's.
I'm not even saying it's a bad game. I'm just saying, like, I'm not sure why it's on the Game of the Year list. Like, from all the other awards it was nominated for, it seems like Hellblade belongs more on this list than PUBG does.
Yeah. It's only up for two other awards, one being Best Ongoing Game and the other being Best Multiplayer. It wasn't even nominated for, like, Best Debut Title for an Indie. Maybe it's not their debut title, I don't know, but...
PUBG Corp making PUBG?
Yeah, so, if it's not even gonna be nominated as the best debut for an indie, then, like, really, what's it doing on Game of the Year? Now, I mean, I understand, like you said, it's a fine game. I wouldn't even say it's a good game, because by all accounts, I've never played it myself, but by all accounts, it is janky as hell. And it's also super simplistic. It's a very high concept game. Drop 100 people on an island and have them fight to the death. And I mean, there's space for that, but like, I just don't understand. Like you said, Horizon, I'm sorry, not Horizon.
Senua's.
Yeah, Senua's Sacrifice, or for me, Nier. Nier should absolutely be on here. If Nier was on here, I would give it to that. But it's not. If Neo was on here, I would give it to that. But it's not. Because both of those games deserve it more than any of the others, except for Persona 5. I'm gonna cancel that one out for me, because that came out last year here in Japan, and I gave it my Game of the Year award then. So, I have disqualified it for this year, for me personally. It is an amazing game. Absolutely, everyone should play it, but it already won Game of the Year last year. So, out of these, I'm gonna give it to Zelda, because just, like I said before, an absolute delight from start to finish. Just the things you can do, the innovation in the design, the art style is amazing, the music is fantastic. I didn't put it over certain other titles in this list, but at the same time, just, you know, it's, what's that word? Gestalt. It's, greater than the sum of its parts. So, yeah, it's that. It's amazing. It does have some issues, but yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd vote for Zelda just because it's Zelda.
Yeah, just because it's Zelda. There you go. All right, well, that does it for that. So now let's talk about the ESRB quiz.
Yay!
Yeah, so for those who don't know, the ESRB quiz, the ESRB is a ratings organization that rates games. based on their content and deems them suitable for various ages, from everyone, E for everyone, all the way up to AO for adults only. And then on their website, there are full descriptions for mini games over the past 10 years or so, of why certain games deserve a certain rating. And I have taken those descriptions and chopped them up into hints, and we're gonna go from, most general to most specific hint. We're gonna see if Jason can guess what the game is.
Alright.
Are you ready, Jason?
Yes.
Are you sure?
No.
Okay, yes. Well, then we'll come back another time. I'm sorry. Right, so the only hint I will give you first is that this game came out in 2008.
Ooh, an oldie.
That's right, it is a golden oldie. So, hint number four, the most general hint I can give, is several interspersed cutscenes depict characters being shot and killed, and sometimes include small splashes of pixelated red blood.
Are you finally giving me a GTA title? Probably not. Probably not, but I'll guess GTA.
All right. A GTA title is incorrect. So we move on to hint number three. You get 3 points if you get this one. One sequence involves female characters wearing and discussing racy, in quotes, bathing suits, while the camera pans and lingers on certain body parts. A handful of cutscenes depict a character smoking a cigarette.
It's not this, but DOA Beach Volleyball?
DOA Beach Volleyball. I'm not sure that includes smoking.
No, it doesn't, but, yeah, that.
no, not that, in fact. No, it is not DOA Beach Volleyball. I'm sorry, Jason. I know your dreams are shattered. But we're moving on to hint number two, so you get 2 points if you get this one. Battles are depicted mostly from a third-person perspective, as players perform as players perform various actions such as firing weapons, using healing items, claiming flag points, and moving tanks along city streets.
Valkyria Chronicles?
Boom! There you go, Jason. Good job. You got 2 whole points for that one.
Oh, I love that game.
There you go. Valkyria Chronicles. Awesome game. Yeah. It just came out in the news today that Valkyria Chronicles 4 was announced. They're going back to their tactical roots after the, just very bad, whatever that other thing was, Valkyria something.
Spin-off or whatever.
I don't know. Yeah, where it wasn't, like, tactical or anything. It was just, like, a run and gun. But anyway, Valkyria Chronicles 4 is coming for PS4, Xbox One, and Switch! So, another reason to get a Switch. Great game, Valkyria Chronicles. It was amazing. Valkyria Chronicles 2 and 3 only came out in Vita. But, the original... it's still great. They did make a remastered version for the PS4, so...
and PC, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. So, yeah, go ahead and pick that up. So again, released 2008, final rating of T for teen, by the way. And the final hint, which I didn't get to, but hint number one, this is a turn-based tactical role-playing game, RPG, in which players control infantry and armored units in warfare against an invading enemy force. I guess that's actually more general than number two, but anyway, such is the way I wrote it. Yeah. So, well done, Jason. Now, that's an old game. Let's talk about some new games. We've been playing. You have one, and I have, like, 1.05.
I mean, like I have one, but I'd barely call it one.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
All right. Fine. I'll start with my 0.05, and then you can talk about your barely one, and then I'll talk about my one.
Okay.
We'll go from smallest to biggest. All right. So, we start with, just the brief I cannot use words today, Jason. I'm just telling you that now. Briefest excursion into the wilds of Skyrim. And I did that via PlayStation VR, not by the Switch. I was hemming and hawing over which version I should actually get, because I knew I was gonna get one of them. But I ended up getting PlayStation VR version, so Skyrim VR. And that game is Skyrim. Just letting you know, like, the very first thing that happens in Skyrim is that you are brought down to an executioner's chopping block, and you are lined up with like 4 or 5 other prisoners. And the very first thing that happened when I got to the chopping block is one of the prisoners kind of couldn't track his way to where he was gonna stand, so he ended up walking all over the village.
And you just had to sit there until he arrived.
No, I mean, he wasn't an important one. He wasn't one of the ones that was going to the block itself. He was just gonna stand as a bystander, so, the scene went on without him, but, it did seem funny that none of the guards were trying to prevent the man from walking away. So that was Skyrim. But, so in VR, it looks, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it looks pretty bad. But it looks bad when you are up close to everything. So, when I was in the horse carriage and I was looking around, actually everything looked pretty nice. I mean, I couldn't really make out the details of faraway things, but that's fine. Then when I got into the town, the first thing I did was, like, I ran up to giant stone structures and was like, wow, these textures are flat. There's actually, like, a very weird kind of system going on for, like, the 3D effect. So, when you look at, say, a mountain very far away, it will show it, like, kind of like a matte painting. So, or like a backdrop or something like that. So, it looks very flat, super far away. But then when you get close, suddenly, like, the 3D rendering pops in. So you get, like, some sense of the size and the distance. But then when you get up close again, like, you get the super flat textures. So, there's a sweet spot where everything looks, super well done. Moving around and stuff, that was perfectly fine. There's kind of a weird thing. I think it's to try to reduce, VR sickness, but when you are moving, like, your field of vision actually gets blocked off. So you get, like, a tunnel vision thing going on. And again, that's probably just to prevent VR sickness, because if you see too much blurs and stuff like that, then your eyes don't really like that. So, it's trying to prevent some of that. And then when you stop and you're, you know, fighting anything like that, like, those open up so you can see to your sides and everything. But, issue I did have is that the UI is definitely not made for VR. And that's kind of a huge deal for me. Because when I play VR games, the way my couch and my TV are kind of angled, I can't sit super comfortably and look directly at the TV. So I've always got an angled view. The way the UI works is you have to be staring directly at the TV, like looking at the screen head on. So the problem is, like, I'll press start and the UI will appear to my left somewhere. So I have to press start and then look left and go, oh, okay, here's the menu. And that wouldn't be quite so bad if other things weren't also relegated to this space. So, for example, the compass. Well, when you're traveling around the world and you're trying to make sure, like, okay, I'm going south, I'm going north, whatever. The compass is part of the UI, and thus it's constantly to my left and low down, so I have to, like, look over there. But also, like, my health and my mana are over there. Yeah, again, like I said, whenever you press for an option, one thing I actually enjoy is I like subtitles just to make sure I'm not missing anything, especially when every character has different accents and it can be hard to understand certain people. So I turn on subtitles, but when you turn on subtitles, those count as UI. So if I want to understand what somebody is saying, I have to, like, turn my right ear to them so I can look at the UI section.
What?
So I just ended up turning off subtitles because whatever. But, yeah, it was just another small thing. So, for right now, it's an annoyance at best. But I haven't really gotten to the areas where, like, I need to start, like, crafting and stuff like that. And that's going to require extensive use
looking of to the left.
Yeah. Extensive use of the UI. So I'm sure any blacksmith is going to be very curious when he comes by to see me, like, hammering this sword while I'm looking to the left. Like, it's okay. It's okay. I'm just working on my skills. Like, smithing by feel. I've lost many a finger to this, but it's weird. But the game itself, I mean, it runs fine. There's no frame rate issues, obviously, because that would cause much more sickness. And, like, combat's okay, but again, like, I can't see my health. So, like, I'll get hit, and, like, oh crap, I hope I'm not dead. Like, I don't know, because the health is over there and I can't look over there right now. But it is pretty fun, like, getting the move controls and, like, actually holding up your shield and swinging your sword, and it's fun like that. But yeah,
that's good.
So I've only played about like 2 hours, so I'll probably have more to say as I keep playing.
I actually played a mobile game that I felt was worthy of talking about this week. It's been out for quite a while. I think I looked up the release date. It was like May or something. It is the mobile game, the mobile companion game for Kung Fury, which, if you're unfamiliar with it, was like some sort of ridiculous comedy throwback to like 80s kung fu action movies. That I believe was produced and released by Netflix. I never watched it. I really wanted to watch it, but I just sort of got put in my queue and then I forgot about it. And now I might go back and watch it because I played this game. I mean, it's a mobile game, and it's not like it's no, you know, Fire Emblem Heroes. It's a mobile game and it's free. So the point of the game, like the basic mechanics are you have a guy, and there are waves of enemies that approach from left and right. And if you tap the left side of the screen, you'll attack left. And if you tap the right side of the screen, you'll attack right. And different enemies have different, like, a number of hits that take to kill them, or different combinations that takes to kill them. And, like, you have different characters that move differently. Like, there's the main character, Kung Fury. There's Barbariana, who is, well, a female barbarian, who for some reason also has a minigun. There's Hacker Man, who is just a giant walking robot with a CRT monitor for a head.
Not even a flat screen?
Nope, it's a green one. It's an old Apple II monitor. It's great. And there is Triceracop, who for some reason is British. And these are the playable characters. And then there is a non-playable character named Thor, who is just literally, he's just Thor, the god of lightning, and he's just obsessed with his pecs and his, like, his biceps. He just talks about his muscles all the time.
If I looked like Chris Hemsworth, I would probably be the same.
Yeah. But the best thing about the game is not necessarily the gameplay, although it is actually interesting because of like the way the different characters move. Like, it makes the same enemies different to fight. Like, there's one kind of like kung fu girl who comes in that if you're just regular Kung Fury, he just does regular attacks. You have to tap toward, away, and toward to do the little combo you need to beat it. But if you're playing Triceracop, he has guns, and every time he shoots his guns, he scoots backwards. So you shoot the thing, you have to push like towards, away, away, because he's scooting backwards while he's doing it, and your positioning changes. So like the combo you need to kill the enemy changes depending on what player your character you're playing. So it's kind of fun, and it's enjoyable, and I liked it. But the best thing about the game is not necessarily the gameplay; it's the art direction. It's hilarious. It's funny. It really, really makes me want to go watch the movie because the voices are obviously intentionally bad. Like Hackerman is possibly the most like deadpan delivery ever. But like, he's not trying to be a robot. He's just like saying like, "Hey guys, I think that we should go this way. You guys, let's go." Like exactly like that. It's really funny. Like the Triceracop is basically like Laurence Olivier, except he's a cop with a Triceratops head. Barbariana is like this emo queen. And I don't know, their delivery is just, it's so bad that it's funny. It's really enjoyable little mobile game, and it's free and it's been out a long time. So yeah, you play it for, you know, a day or two, have some laughs, and then, you know, get rid of it. It's fun though. I enjoy it.
All right. Well, yeah, that's, that hacker man sounds interesting.
It was really funny. Yeah. His gameplay is really weird too. Like, you have to like target the enemy by hitting them like 5 times, but then like once you do that, you can stay in hacking mode, which like as long as you keep your combo going, you just kill whatever's on the screen. It's weird.
Yeah. All right. Well, the last game I played, and I said one full game. I haven't completely finished it yet, but I think I'm somewhat near the end, maybe. Is Rhyme. So, Rhyme actually came out, a little while ago for PS4 and Xbox One, but, I was waiting for it to come to the Switch because it seemed like a perfect Switch game. It's, all of the trailers and everything made it seem, kind of, in the vein of Eco, the classic Team Eco, PS2 game, where, in this game, you are a boy who washes ashore after a storm hits your little boat. You wake up on this island, or I'm not sure if it's an island or even like a continent or anything. Anyway, you wake up on this strange beach and you're wandering around. And immediately it's apparent that there's like all these weird structures around you, and, you can pick up all kinds of different things. You can pick up little conch shells and blow into them and, pick up little pieces of puzzles, I guess. There's a whole bunch of collectible items that I came across just while wandering around. And that was pretty cool. But the main thing you're supposed to be doing in the game is, solving a bunch of puzzles. And, there's a pretty nice variety. So some of them are kind of, visual puzzles. There's one set of puzzles where it's, you're looking through a kind of a peephole kind of thing. And as you look through it, you can change your line of sight so that it manipulates these blocks, and you have to make sure that they're lined up in a specific pattern so that like it unlocks doors, or just a new area or something like that. So that was one of the puzzles, and there are also physics-based puzzles and time-based puzzles and all kinds of different things. And so as you unlock these different puzzles or finish them, you get various keys, and you bring the keys to certain statues, and you put them in, and then, yeah, you get more ways that you can progress. So I think I finished, like, the first area. It took a long while to finish that, and I heard the game it only takes like 6 hours or so to complete. So I think I might be about halfway. Now there's, without spoiling anything too much, now there's some kind of, antagonistic thing going on. There is an antagonist of some kind. So the mystery of the island or the whatever is still completely a mystery. Like, I see glimpses of stuff everywhere. There's lots of murals that kind of depict things that happened in the past, or they're presenting what's happening right now. Not entirely sure. But it is nice to see them and try to decipher what they're trying to tell you, because sometimes they give you a hint for a collectible item that's in the area, and sometimes they're just, you know, something to look at because it's pretty and it tells you a story. The only thing I will say, though, is that the Rime version, I haven't played the PS4 version or the Xbox One version or the PC version, obviously, but I don't know how those run, but the Switch version is not so good. There are many, many, many times when, like, there will be a cutscene of some kind and the camera will be panning and it drops into, like, single-digit frame rates. And something that has happened quite often, it's very distracting when it happens, is you'll get a big long straightaway where the boy can just run for a bit, and the camera kind of pans out because, you know, it's supposed to be a beautiful shot, like, oh, look at this boy running across this giant bridge. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, it's kind of cute. But then, like, I'm looking at the boy and, like, he's literally losing parts of his body, like, not whole parts, but, like, he is becoming pixelated. So, like, I can see through his thighs or his arms, and, like, it's weird and creepy, and it's not good. So there's also some severe problems with the anti-aliasing, so that basically means there's a whole bunch of jagged edges everywhere when something is moving. And it becomes very apparent. Again, as soon as you start running, you'll see a lot of that. But, it does look nice. It just looks best when you're not moving fast. I guess I hope I never have to, like, super run. Yeah, it's a fun little game, and it doesn't cost too much. I'll be finished with it pretty soon. But it does look like I'm missing a lot of the things you can collect, so I'll probably have to go back for those.
You trophy hunter, you.
I will say that was one thing that was kind of weird. So the Switch does not have trophies. Nintendo hasn't said they're going to implement them anytime soon. But when I finished, the first area, it gave me a cutscene before going to the next one. And it actually did say, like, achievement unlocked, something. I can't remember what it said. Huh. But, yeah, it came down right from the top and, yeah, achievement unlocked. You've done this. I'm like, oh. Okay, like, that's, yeah, like, did the Switch add in an update without telling me? Yeah, this is, it's fun. It's a quick diversion, so, yeah, that is the last game that we played, I think. So we're gonna move on then. We're moving on to next week. We're not moving up. or any direction, really. Moving to next week, or actually, kind of, again, this week, since we've had to record this thing so late. This week, there are games coming out. Did you know that, Jason?
I didn't. I thought games were done. I thought they were just done as a thing.
They're almost done as a thing. I'd give it another few months, you know, make sure loot boxes aren't everything first, and then the games industry as a whole will just, like, collapse upon itself. I suddenly picture the future where you can exchange currency between different games, among the same publisher. Exchanger, Battlefront 2 credits for Titanfall 3 credits. Like, oh, please don't do that. No. I probably shouldn't have even said it out loud. The guys at EA are like, oh, there we go. There's an interesting idea. Anyway, let's talk about games that are coming out this week. So, specifically starting today, the 20th, on the Nintendo Switch, you can get Lumo, which is a kind of a throwback platforming game. Chris didn't like it very much. Then we have, again, for the Nintendo Switch, coming out is Gear Club Unlimited. I'm not sure if that's a golf game or a racing game, but Gear Club Unlimited. Next up for PS4, we have Project Nimbus Code Mirai, so Code Future. Nintendo Switch is getting Super Beat Zonic, which is, it came out a few years ago for the Vita. It's a rhythm game. Bit too hard for me. I couldn't unlock all the songs. That was kind of disappointing. This week is the official release of Animal Crossing Pocket Camp worldwide. So it's, still currently in the Australian, like, testing market. But, if you want your hands on it, then there you go. The 22nd is your day, Wednesday. Also on that day, we get Earth Defense Force 4.1 Wing Diver the Shooter coming to PS4.
Okay.
So that's right. Next up we have on the 23rd for the Switch, we have Portal Knights coming out. That came out originally last year for early access and earlier this year for PlayStation 4. I'm jumping ahead. That's going to be a next week release, so we'll talk about that next week. Also, for PlayStation, in particular, we have the retail version of Axiom Verge is coming out for PS4 and Vita. And, that is being done by Badland Games. The Battle of the Bulge is coming out for PS4, World War II strategy game. Monster of the Deep, Final Fantasy 15, that's the VR fishing game.
Okay.
Although, you wouldn't be able to tell just from the title. Well, no, okay, never mind, I see the lure now. There is a very, very creepy looking fish here. It is definitely a monster of the deep, but at the same time, it's like, it's a fishing game. So, don't be tempted, people. I didn't know this was coming out, but Planet of the Apes Lost Frontier.
Sure.
There you go. Is a narrative adventure game of conquest, betrayal, and survival. So that's coming to PS4. Rec Room is coming to PSVR. I've actually heard a lot of good things about this for people who play it on PC. It's got, a whole bunch of different, you make an avatar, you hang out in lobbies, but in the lobbies you can do all kinds of interesting things. Like they have, good old arcade games like Ski Ball, but then you can also do like laser tag and, Yeah, so all kinds of different things. And I'm not sure if they'll charge money for it though, because on the PC it's free. So I don't know. Have to see when it comes out this week for PSVR. And that's actually it. So we're kind of hitting the dregs now because we're coming up on Thanksgiving, and that means all the games that are gonna be sold for Black Friday have already shipped. They're already in the stores. They're ready to be put on shelves. And please don't kill people for video games, people. Like,
yeah, that seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, like even if I mean, please don't kill people for a Switch. Like, please don't. Other than that, fa la 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 ka-ching. Yeah. Happy shopping and happy Thanksgiving to people in the States. We don't have Thanksgiving in Japan, although thank you, Jason, for providing a sumptuous Thanksgiving meal.
We had some turkey. That's pretty right. Good.
Yep. And that's gonna do it for us at the Kaiju Popcast. But you can also check out our content on our website at kaijupop.com. Or you can follow us on social media. You can find us at twitter.com/kaijupop or youtube.com/kaijupop. Or you can follow us personally. I am at Kyoshi Banzai.
And I am at Gibsaurus.
And as always, we appreciate it when you like, listen, subscribe, and do all that stuff with all of our website goodies. And we will talk to you soon. Goodbye.
See ya. Viento a viento va este